The Michael Chapman Giving Show is a compelling and informative half-hour weekly radio program that celebrates the joy of giving, sharing real stories from those who give of their time, talent, and treasure to make a difference in our world. The show also showcases inspiring stories from today's most active and respected charitable organizations, as well as interviews with humanitarian heroes and philanthropists. After airing on radio, the Michael Chapman Radio Show will also be made available as a downloadable podcast via the internet and mobile devices worldwide.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Michael Chapman Giving Show. Turn your radios up really, really loud because we have an exceptional guest for you today. My guest today is the lady from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Lori Jacob with. We have been tweeting back and forth over the past few months, and I've been extremely impressed with her work in the philanthropic sector. We're going to flip the script, do something a little bit differently today. We have addressed the issues of board participation within the nonprofit sector over the past few months. In fact, we've dealt with it extensively, but we've always dealt with it from a nonprofit perspective. What people don't realize is that on this show, the majority of our listeners are business leaders. So we're going to do something from the business leader perspective. But let me tell you a little bit about Lori and why I'm impressed with her. She's a communication and fundraising strategist, a national trainer on all issues related to philanthropy. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thank you so much, Michael. I'm honored to be here today.
So am I. I'm honored that you would take time out of your busy schedule. I know you've been jet-setting across the country speaking, and so thank you for gracing us with your presence today.
Well, thank you.
I want to get right into it. From a business leader perspective, I know I have been asked on many occasions to serve on boards. I have many friends who have been asked to serve on boards. Oftentimes that means serving on boards means I have to give money.
Right.
So my question to you would be this. As a business leader, if I was asked to support a nonprofit organization with my time, what should I expect?
Well, I love this question. My passion is to create an environment where the business community, the philanthropic community, and the social profit organizations, I like to refer to those nonprofits as what they're good at, social profit, how they communicate together powerfully to do their work, to end homelessness or to feed the hungry. So if you're asked to serve on a board or even to volunteer, what I often ask people to do is to pause for a second and think about if you were asked to be hired by a company, what would you want to know about them? And then do your due diligence as a business leader, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, as a philanthropist. Do your due diligence to ask some questions. Because, of course, every social profit organization needs more money. That's a given. They've got more work to do. But what they're often not telling the volunteer leadership, because they don't know how to tell them, or the community at large, is here's a whole host of other things that we would like to do better or know better. So if the organization, take you for example, Michael, invites you to serve on their board, what I'd have you do is ask them, what is my job description? What do you require from me? What are the things you're going to measure about my participation? And how do you identify, recruit, orient, and then assimilate board members into your organization? Now, that whole piece of governance, that adding new board members to an organization, that might be your place of teaching them. In addition to the contribution that you may make as a supporter of this organization and as a board member, maybe they don't have any idea how to identify, recruit, orient, and assimilate new board members other than to say, hey, Michael, would you be a part of our board? We know you've got a voice in the community. We know that you think philanthropy is important. Come help us do our work, which gives you no guidelines on how to be a great board member and really sets you up for frustration and them up for frustration because you haven't really talked about what are the expectations.
So what I hear you saying is that oftentimes, this leads into my second question, oftentimes board members are frustrated, and sometimes nonprofits are frustrated because the board member skills are not being properly utilized.
Right. Well, and often it's because, and I have many, many, many organizations around the country that I've worked with over the years, and they do great work. They have great intention. The staff of social profit organizations have just huge passion. The truth is, they're not sure what to ask you for. They're nervous about asking you to do too much. So they know for sure the very one thing they need from everybody is money. So they'll ask you to make a gift, and they'll ask you to strong-arm your friends to make a gift, and they might not teach you how to do that. They might not even invite you to decide if you want to do that. What I recommend board members do, especially in those early weeks and months when you join a board or after you've been on the board for a long time, is to sit down and put some boundaries around, to put some expectations around. How do we perform as a board and a staff and communicate powerfully so that we're meeting our strategic vision, we're raising the dollars that we need to, and we're providing a way for every single one of us to bring our skills to the table. You might be the HR vice president of your company. You probably know some great things about hiring and firing, best practices around employee benefits. I can guarantee you most, especially smaller nonprofits, don't have any skills in those areas. And they don't know enough to ask you to help them about those topics. So if you serve on a board and you feel like you're not being utilized to your fullest capability, one of the recommendations I have is go visit the organization, ask to shadow the CEO for an hour or two. Do what you do if you just hired a new top-level manager at your company and poke in and start to notice where the skills you or your staff, your team might have at your company could actually benefit the organization.
One of the things I like about your background is the fact that you're a communication strategist as well as a fundraising specialist as well, and I think that's a very unique thing. Oftentimes, nonprofit organizations feel like they need fundraising help,
right,
but a lot of times it's just a matter of clear communication. Am I correct?
It's so true. Clear communication. One of the very first things I'll do with an organization, and I just did a session like this on Tuesday down in Louisiana. I worked with the board and the staff to clearly, in a compelling way, talk about what is their funding gap. And it wasn't with charts and graphs. It was a very short example of a child that was served by this organization and what's the balance of what has to be raised between now and their fiscal year end on June 30th. Let me tell you, the board members hadn't heard that amount before, and they hadn't known to ask about where are we at with our funding gap for this year. My guess is, after leaving them on Tuesday, they will not end the year in the red by June 30th because everybody got into action. They practiced some language. I believe it's one thing in life that causes success, whether it's with your spouse or your business or your children, and that is clear communication.
So the same thing that happens with communication in our families most certainly applies to this partnership. And it is a partnership between business and also nonprofit. Now, the question I want to ask you is this. Now, this is a hot potato. In fact, Catherine Laughlin, who is a regular on this show, has talked often about this subject as well. And that is the subject of, do I have to give financially if I serve on a board?
Well, my personal belief is that we want 100% giving from the staff and the board, and that could be a dollar. There's no dollar amount attached to it. It's very powerful to speak to a funder from a foundation, a corporation, or an individual to say, we have 100% of our community, our leadership, our staff, and our board supporting this organization financially. Now, lots of organizations get uncomfortable in saying, well, we think we should tell the board how much they should give. I'm not a believer of that. I'm also a believer that you might give a smaller amount than you could actually help to raise. You might have some access to other buddies in town, some organizations in town, where you could provide the door open to generate some dollars, and that's as important, if not more. Can I give a quick example?
Absolutely.
So a number of years ago, I was doing a session with the board and staff, and I had the CEO of the organization talk about the funding gap. And one of the things that's actually been keeping her up at night, and this is Carol, the CEO, she was talking about the fact that they were eliminating most of the benefits for staff in order to keep the doors open. Now, one of the people on their board happened to be a person who works for, they manage the human resource department of small businesses and nonprofits. And Janet, the CEO of this HR company, hadn't realized and had never heard Carol share that was keeping her up at night. And that $100,000 and the line item of the budget was actually going to be able to keep the doors open. But Janet knew, as an HR professional, that they'll also start to lose their staff. So that night, Janet said to me as she walked out the door, "I now see my place here." And she went on to reach out to her colleagues in the human resource arena across the country, in fact, and within a few weeks invited participation, showed a quick video, got people excited, and raised $100,000. Now, Janet would tell you before that session, she was not a fundraiser, and she didn't care to ever ask people for money. But when she saw the impact of not being able to retain its quality staff that had a direct relation to something she could understand and relate to, which was the benefits package, she made a 180 change, and huge, huge change happened at the organization. They now, every year, have sponsors of their employee benefits program.
That is a powerful illustration and story, and it ties back into your point about utilizing the board member's skills properly.
Yeah. When we don't ask what a board member's skills are, or we don't take the time in the interview process as we're recruiting new board members, we get a great group of people usually who want to be helpful, who want to support the organization, but they don't know what to do. And if I'm a community member and I've owned my own business for a while, or I'm a senior VP at a company, my time is limited too. You got to be very specific about what the needs of the organization are, not in an ASCII way, but in a here's the facts. Here are the areas that I could use some advice on. Now we get into the ego thing of CEOs from social profit organizations. They won't always tell you what they don't know. Sometimes it's because they don't know what they don't know. I believe our job as business leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs, is to ask more questions. It's to uncover and cause some uncomfortableness in how the organization is being run. That's part of our fiduciary responsibility, to make sure the organization is being run as effectively as possible. Not to fire the CEO necessarily, but to train them. Our job is to train them as much as it is the organization's job to orient us how to be a great board member. Does that make sense?
It makes plenty of sense. We're going to have to take a quick break, but if you're just now joining the discussion, we're talking with Lori Jacob with a communications and fundraising strategist based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Check out her website, by the way. It's LoriJacobWith.com. LoriJacobWith.com. We'll be right back in a moment on the Michael Chapman Giving Show.
Selling through speaking. It's the new way to boost sales without being pushy or salesy. Business owners, entrepreneurs, and consultants are using public speaking as a marketing and sales tool to increase sales, and you can too. Selling through speaking is the best way to structure and present irresistible offers that inspires people to buy now and allows you to enjoy big sales results. Visit sellingthroughspeaking.com and their experts will take you by the hand and personally walk you through creating a signature talk that easily sells your core products and services, all without being pushy or salesy. Call 305-479-2403 for a free consultation. That's 305-479-2403. Or visit sellingthroughspeaking.com.
And now, back to the Michael Chapman Giving Show on 880 AM, The Biz.
Lori, I'm going to get right back to it. What I want to talk to you about for this next 15 minutes before the show ends is this. Most community leaders want to make a difference. I mean, excuse me, most business leaders and business owners, entrepreneurs, want to make a bigger difference in the community. How do they go about doing that? Aside from just reaching for the checkbook and writing a check, how else can business leaders make a difference in the community?
It's a loaded question, and I know we have limited time, so I'll keep it tight. It used to be that writing a check was the thing. That was my mom and dad's era of philanthropy. That was it. You didn't have to do much more than show up at the board meetings and write your check and be gone. In this time that we're in with the explosion of conversation through social media, explosion of needs for each social profit organization, the best way that you can serve as a board member or provide your community service as a volunteer is to do what you love. So making sure that you identify an organization that's got the very gap in their administrative programming or in their visibility building or in their fundraising or whatever it is, and you bring your skills there. There's a new term, buzz term these days, called skill-based volunteering. And our job as volunteers is to know what we do well. So mine happens to be, I love to teach organizations how to communicate about their funding needs, how to put a funding plan together, how to train their board members, how to work to have that communication be powerful. If an organization asks a volunteer in that capacity, I do that occasionally. But what I really know that I want to do as a volunteer is oftentimes something totally different from my job. So I'll go rock babies at the children's hospital, or I'll read books in a children's classroom. But then I don't get upset that they're asking me to do something that I didn't say I wanted to do, because I'm clear what skills I'm bringing to the table. So it's as important as a community volunteer and a board member to interview the organization and to find out what they're not telling you. Oftentimes, they're just putting their fingers in the holes in the dike every day to keep the doors open. And they're living in what I call a view of the world of scarcity. Our job as a board or community volunteer is to sort of stop that thought process, remove the toxic myths of scarcity, if you will, and provide our skills to the organization in a way that can add value, sometimes affect the bottom line, and then it's a win-win for all of us.
Now, you know, I'm a real sucker for stories, and I know you have many of them, great best practices and examples of great business, nonprofit partnerships. Can you pull a few more from the Lori vault, if you will, and give me some examples of how partnerships are working well across the country?
Well, there's one in particular, and then I've got some others if we've got time. There's a company in Minneapolis that provides the photos for high school students and the yearbooks. And a colleague and friend of mine, we'll call her Mary, she was hired as the executive director of an organization that provided services to at-risk youth. And Mary had never been a CEO before. But she happened to have an in to get to the CEO of this major company. And we'll call the gentleman Ed. And what happened is she got a hold of Ed. She got through the gatekeeper, and she got in the door. And she didn't make the mistake that lots of us might do, and she didn't invite Ed to serve on the board. She asked Ed to be her mentor. She was green and new and didn't know how to do all the pieces of running a social profit organization. So Mary invited Ed to spend about 2 hours a month with her, and she would bring her burning business questions about what to be doing with hiring, firing, and program, and visibility, and PR, and marketing. This was about, 7 years ago. over the course of time, Ed asked to increase those hours that he could spend with her because he saw she was really a sponge. And don't we all want to help people who want to learn? So what Ed ended up doing is providing, over time, some volunteers from his organization to help with their programming. His company became a sponsor of the large event that the organization had each spring. That partnership became it started, I think, at $25,000 and grew over time to over $100,000. They also published a book of some of the kids' drawings and made a big, huge book, release day when the kids could be signing their book and us as community members could meet the authors. Ed became a personal donor to the organization and then identified key people in his company who could serve on the board and continue to guide Mary in how she could grow the organization. Now, that all started from one tiny dream that Mary had to be a really good CEO. She was willing to say she didn't know stuff, and Ed grew that relationship. It was a trust-built relationship. He trusted that she was going to take action, and the guidance that he was able to give her was being acted on. And the return on investment was that more children in our community were being impacted in a positive way. The normal thing we might do is go quickly run to Ed and ask him to serve on our board without having any idea of what his company could provide or what we needed. And I applaud Mary for not making that mistake.
I love that example. I mean, just simply asking someone to be a mentor as opposed to, hey, you're a person of prominence in the community. You seem to have money. Come sit on my board and help us out.
Right.
But there was a step that she took before that. This Ed sounds like a fascinating person.
Well, and what I'll tell you is I think if Mary had asked for the $5,000 or $25,000 gift and said, come serve on our board and we really want you to give that amount every year, she would have lost that relationship and she would have never gotten the volunteer pool, the $100,000 sponsorship over time. It just would have stopped because As you know, sometimes we feel like an ATM, We feel like a cash machine, and that's all. And what got to happen is those people in Ed's company who had a passion for kids, who wanted to help at-risk youth, it became a company-wide participation versus just Ed serving on a board.
I love that example. It reminds me of a friend of mine who is a person of tremendous means. And he made a point to me. Now, most of his philanthropic work is actually in the faith-based religious sector. That's where he feels more comfortable. He's more of a religious donor. And he said to me, I'm tired of organizations coming to me for money. What I really want is I want a ministry. I want to be involved in this organization. I don't want to just cut checks. I can do that anywhere. And your point, your example about Ed in this situation is that this is a person that really wanted to give more than just the money.
Well, and I think he was taken aback by the fact that she didn't ask him for money at first.
That's different.
When you have means, it's usually the first thing out of people's mouths. Could you please support us? And, oh, by the way, could you also serve on the board? And now they know you want access to my checkbook. What Mary did is she created an authentic, meaningful, philanthropic relationship that was about passion, that was about kids, that was about the impact and the mission of the organization, and it blossomed well beyond that. Do I have time for another quick story?
We have about 4 minutes. Yes, go ahead and throw in another one.
It's a really quick story about when it didn't work. This is my story. I was asked to give $400 to an organization to help them with their garden for their preschool daycare. And I said, sure, kids is my thing. I love kids and said yes immediately. But I got the perfunctory thank you. Now, I would do a lot in helping an organization with my time if I love them. The next time I heard from them was a year and a half later when I got the dear friends letter saying, please, would you increase your gift from your gifts that you gave last year? We noticed you hadn't given recently. Now, I didn't get a thank you from the kids. I didn't get a picture of the garden. I didn't get invited to go dig my hands into the garden. If they had allowed me what I was hungry for, which was connection with their kids, they'd have me as a donor at a much higher level than $400, and I wouldn't be telling the story of how they did it wrong.
Well, sometimes we can learn in failure, and I'm glad you shared both the pros and cons. Now, we have about 3 minutes left, and I want to give that all to you because you're giving us exceptional value today. Speak
well,
to the... Go ahead.
A couple of new statistics out, just
okay.
even this week, from an amazing woman named Penelope Burke and her company called Cygnus Research. Penelope, every year, does some questionnaires to donors around the country. This year it was 17,000-plus donors. Here's what we should know as business leaders, especially if we're board members. Most of the people that she surveyed, about 6% of the social profit organizations, actually trained their board members on how to help and how to be effective board members. 6%. 18%, another amazingly low number, said their boards evaluate their fundraising performance once a year. The other 82% said, we don't take a look at where the money comes from. We don't take a look at how we're communicating or thanking donors. We don't actually help make a phone call and thank a donor. We just are expected to show up, give our money, and go home. So it goes back to the we have a perception, sort of like our doctor. We think our doctor might know best, and sometimes your gut tells you, you know what, I don't feel right, and this there's something not right. Well, leadership at social profit organizations don't always know what to do with you. And because of the fact that they're not assimilating or training their board members on how to do the very right things with their skills at an organization, your impact is less, the organization's impact is less, and the dollars you raise is less.
Mm. From my heart to yours, Lori, I appreciate you very much. I'm getting the finger, not literally from my producer, but I have about a minute left, literally. And I just want to let you know that I appreciate you and what you share. This is like a live radio seminar. I'm afraid I'm going to have to end it there, but I will say this. If you want to reach out to Lori, feel free to give her a call, 952-949-2105. Again, that's 952-949-2105. If you're a business leader, listen to this program, or a nonprofit, wanting to know more about her services, please reach out to her. Thank you so much, Lori, for being on the Michael Chapman Giving Show.
What an honor and what a gift you are to our country. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you. We'll see you next week, same time on the Michael Chapman Giving Show. Thank you. Have a great day.